There was music from my neighbor's house through the summer nights. In his blue gardens, men and girls came and went like moths among the whisperings and the champagne and the stars. At high tide in the afternoon, I watched his guests diving from the tower of his raft, or taking the sun on the hot sand of his beach, while his two motorboats slit the waters of the Sound. On weekends, his Rolls-Royce became an omnibus, bearing parties to and from the city, while his station wagon scampered like a brisk yellow bug to meet all the trains. And on Mondays, 8 servants, including an extra gardener, toiled all day with mops and scrubbing brushes and hammers and garden shears, repairing the ravages of the night before. At least once a fortnight, a corps of caterers came down with several hundred feet of canvas and enough colored lights to make a Christmas tree of Gatsby's enormous garden. On buffet tables garnished with glistening hors d'oeuvres, spiced baked hams crowded against salads of harlequin designs, and pastry pigs and turkeys bewitched to a dark gold. In the main hall, a bar with a real brass rail was set up and stocked with liquors so long forgotten that most of his female guests were too young to know one from another. By 7 o'clock, the orchestra had arrived. The last swimmers have come in from the beach now and are dressing upstairs. The cars from New York are parked 5 deep in the drive. The bar is in full swing, and floating rounds of cocktails permeate the garden outside until the air is alive with chatter and laughter. I believe that on the first night I went to Gatsby's house, I was one of the few guests who had actually been invited. People were not invited. They went there. They got into automobiles which bore them out to Long Island, and somehow they ended up at Gatsby's door. Once there, they were introduced by somebody who knew Gatsby, and after that, they conducted themselves according to the rules of behavior associated with an amusement park. Sometimes they came and went without having met Gatsby at all. I had been actually invited. A chauffeur in a uniform of robin's egg blue crossed my lawn early that Saturday morning with a surprisingly formal note from his employer. The honor would be entirely Gatsby's, it said, if I would attend his little party that night. He had seen me several times and had intended to call on me long before, but a peculiar combination of circumstances had prevented it. Signed J.J.A.Y. Gatsby, in a majestic hand. Dressed up in white flannels, I went over to his lawn a little after 7, and wandered around rather ill at ease among swirls and eddies of people I didn't know. I made an attempt to find my host, but the 2 or 3 people of whom I asked his whereabouts stared at me in such an amazed way that I slunk off in the direction of the cocktail table, the only place in the garden where a single man could linger without looking purposeless and alone. I was on my way to get roaring drunk from sheer embarrassment when Jordan Baker came out of the house and stood at the head of the marble steps, looking with contemptuous interest down into the garden. "Hello," I roared, advancing toward her. "I thought you might be here," she responded absently as I came up. With Jordan's slender golden arm resting in mine, we descended the steps and sauntered about the garden. A tray of cocktails floated at us through the twilight, and we sat down at a table with 2 girls in yellow and 3 men, each one introduced to us as Mr. Mumble. "Do you come to these parties often?" inquired Jordan of the girl beside her. "The last one was the one I met you at," answered the girl. She turned to her companion. "Wasn't it for you, Lucille?"
"It was for Lucille, too."
"I like to come," said Lucille. "I always have a good time. When I was here last, I tore my gown on a chair, and he asked me my name and address. Inside of a week, I got a package from Quarrier's with a new evening gown in it. $265. "There's something funny about a fellow that'll do a thing like that," said the other girl. "He doesn't want any trouble with anybody."
"Who doesn't?" I inquired.
"Gatsby. Somebody told me."
The 2 girls and Jordan leaned together confidentially.
"They thought he killed a man once."
A thrill passed over all of us, and we turned and looked around for Gatsby. The first supper, there would be another one after midnight, was now being served, and Jordan invited me to join her own party. who had assumed to itself the function of representing the staid nobility of the countryside, East Egg condescending to West Egg. After a somehow wasteful half hour, Jordan whispered, "Let's get out. This is much too polite for me." We got up, and she explained that we were going to find the host. I had never met him, she said, and it was making me uneasy. The bar, where we glanced first, was crowded, but Gatsby was not there. She couldn't find him from the top of the steps, and he wasn't on the veranda. On a chance, we tried an important-looking door and walked into a high Gothic library, paneled with carved English oak, and probably transported complete from some ruin overseas. A stout, middle-aged man with enormous owl-eyed spectacles was sitting somewhat drunk on the edge of a great table, staring with unsteady concentration at the shelves of books. As we entered, he wheeled excitedly around. "What do you think?" He waved his hand toward the bookshelves. "They're real. Absolutely real. Pages and everything. Here, let me show you." We shook hands with him gravely and went back outdoors. By midnight, the hilarity had increased. A celebrated tenor had sung in Italian, and a notorious contralto had sung in jazz, and happy, vacuous bursts of laughter rose toward the summer sky. I was still with Jordan Baker. We were sitting at a table with a man of about my age and a rowdy little girl who gave way upon the slightest provocation to uncontrollable laughter. At a lull in the entertainment, the man looked at me and smiled. "Your face is familiar. Weren't you in the 1st Division during the war?" "Why, yes, I was in the 28th Infantry." "I was in the 16th until June 1918. I knew I'd seen you somewhere before." We talked for a moment about some wet, gray little villages in France. Evidently he lived in this vicinity, for he told me that he had just bought a hydroplane and was going to try it out in the morning. "Want to go with me, old sport? Just near the shore along the Sound?" "What time?" "Any time that suits you best." It was on the tip of my tongue to ask his name when Jordan looked around and smiled. "Having a gay time now?" "Much better." I turned again to my new acquaintance. "This is an unusual party for me. I haven't even seen the host. I live over there." I waved my hand at the invisible hedge in the distance. "And this man Gatsby sent over his chauffeur with an invitation." For a moment he looked at me as if he failed to understand. "I'm Gatsby." "What?" I exclaimed. "Oh, I beg your pardon. I thought you knew, old sport. I'm afraid I'm not a very good host." He smiled. It was one of those rare smiles with a quality of eternal reassurance in it that you may come across 4 or 5 times in life. I was looking at an elegant young roughneck, a year or two over 30, whose elaborate formality of speech just missed being absurd. Almost at the moment when Mr. Gatsby identified himself, a butler hurried toward him with the information that Chicago was calling him on the wire. He excused himself with a small bow that included each of us in turn. When he was gone, I turned to Jordan. "Who is he? Where is he from?" "Well, he told me once he was an Oxford man." A dim background started to take shape behind him, but at her next remark it faded away. "However, I don't believe it." There was the boom of a bass drum, and the voice of the orchestra leader rang out suddenly above the echolalia of the garden. "Ladies and gentlemen, at the request of Mr. Gatsby, we are going to play for you Mr. Vladimir Tostov's latest work, which attracted so much attention at Carnegie Hall last May." The nature of Mr. Tostov's composition eluded me, because just as it began, my eyes fell on Gatsby, standing alone on the marble steps and looking from one group to another with approving eyes. His tan skin was drawn attractively tight on his face, and his short hair looked as though it were trimmed every day. I could see nothing sinister about him. Gatsby's butler was suddenly standing behind us. "Miss Baker, I beg your pardon, but Mr. Gatsby would like to speak to you alone." "With me?" she exclaimed. She got up slowly, raising her eyebrows at me in astonishment, and followed the butler toward the house. I was alone, and it was almost 2. I went inside. The large room was full of people. One of the girls in yellow was playing the piano, and beside her stood a tall, red-haired young lady from a famous chorus engaged in song. I looked around. Most of the women were now having fights with men said to be their husbands. Even Jordan's party, the quartet from East Egg, were rent asunder by dissension. One of the men was talking with curious intensity to a young actress, and his wife, after attempting to laugh at the situation in a dignified and indifferent way, broke down entirely and at intervals appeared suddenly at his side and hissed, "You promised!" As I waited for my hat in the hall, the door of the library opened and Jordan Baker and Gatsby came out together. He was saying some last word to her, but the eagerness in his manner tightened abruptly into formality as several people approached him to say goodbye. Jordan's party were calling impatiently to her from the porch, but she lingered for a moment to shake hands. "I've just heard the most amazing thing. Please come and see me. Phone book. Name of Mrs. Sigourney Howard, my aunt." She was hurrying off as she talked. Her brown hand waved a jaunty salute as she melted into her party at the door. Rather ashamed that on my first appearance I had stayed so late, I joined the last of Gatsby's guests, who were clustered around him. I wanted to apologize for not having known him in the garden. "Don't give it another thought, old sport. And don't forget, we're going up in the hydroplane tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. Then the butler, behind his shoulder, "Philadelphia wants you on the phone, sir." "All right, in a minute. Tell them I'll be right there." He smiled. And suddenly there seemed to be a pleasant significance in having been among the last to go, as if he had desired it all the time. "Good night, old sport. Good night." I turned away and cut across the lawn toward home. I glanced back once. A wafer of a moon was shining over Gatsby's house, making the night fine as before and surviving the laughter and the sound of his still glowing garden. A sudden emptiness seemed to flow now from the windows and the great doors, endowing with complete isolation the figure of the host, who stood on the porch, his hand up in a formal gesture of farewell.